Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the topic of God, the only cause and creator. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we are very glad you joined us this morning. And we will start with the morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 20 of Addenda to Collectania. Mr. Teddy says, abide in love. Nothing can touch or harm you in love. Know that you live in love. Love is God as life itself. Take this understanding with you and bless others with love. To know there is but one God, one cause, one effect, one mind heals instantly. Have but one God, and your reflection of Him does the healing. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. Okay, and Karen.
Watch number 138. Watch lest your prayers or mental work include an effort to gain more spiritual power from God, when you should seek to enlarge your capacity to reflect more of His power. Is God's power something that He sends or withdraws as it is sought or not sought? God is sending forth more than you receive. Hence, your effort must be to increase your capacity to receive. A still higher realization shows man to be the very presence of God expressed, the very power of God expressed.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
Well, I was thinking about. I'm sorry.
Please go ahead.
Oh, and it's everywhere about God's power. It's in the Lord's Prayer. It's in Timothy, and I won't recite them all, but it's wonderful. It's all God's power.
Thank you. Okay, Karen.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, something similar. It's in our treatment for every day. You have dominion in God over the world, the flesh and the devil, a dominion that is omnipotent. So there it is in our daily treatment. So we do have that dominion. And unless we express it, I mean, that's how God's dominion is expressed. It's through man and the universe. So that's what we are. That's what we do. That's who we are. Use expression.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. Also, go ahead, Florence.
Go ahead. No, this is an unchanging thing I learned in science, that God, we are always in God's presence, always present, but it's our awakening to it that counts. You know, He's everywhere, He's all power, no opposition to Him, but it's our awakening to that those facts.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm here to thank, because I can tell you countless times I was saying, oh, I wish God would just give me more of this, whatever I thought I needed. Well, that's the wrong way to go about it, and I finally learned, thank God. But the right prayer is, dear God, please open my eyes to see more of what you've already done. And that prayer, you can make progress and go forward.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's this.
Okay, go ahead, Michael.
There's a quote from Mary Baker Eddy, but I'm gonna paraphrase it. But she says, "My best work was done when I got Mary out of the way, and I let God be reflected." So
it's a good one. Yes, indeed.
And isn't this really the definition of humility?
Yes.
You have to be humble to be able to.
Well, yeah. And how do you be humble? That's the, that's the
key. Acknowledging only God as what is. His supremacy, His presence, His everywhereness, This is something I learned right in the beginning. I was so pleased with it. I didn't know. What's everywhereness?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's a misconception out there of what it means to be meek, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's some people who think you kind of belittle yourself and then stay that way and don't accomplish much, right?
And be self-reliant.
And supposed to be happy with yourself for being so self-righteous or something like that. That's not what humility is. Because, I mean, Mrs. Eddy referred to Jesus, right? As, you know, the humble Nazarene, mightier than anybody else on earth.
And I just thought this watching point was so great to remind us that we have our part to do. God's already done everything, and our part is just to realize that we are that reflection, as has been said. But these watching points are so terrific.
Yeah, and if we do that correctly, we can expect the very best, can't we?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, why not? Because God is the best.
You know, this goes with what Florence read in her prayer this morning, that reflection of Him does the healing. I and my Father are one. The Father that dwelleth in me, He doeth the works. And the Father hath not left me alone.
And of mine own self, I can do nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
In an article that Carrie sent, Law and Creation, which goes along, I think, well with this, it refers to, in the lesson, citation 7, the miracle introduces no disorder, but unfolds the primal order, establishing the science of God's unchangeable law. And in the article, God's unchangeable law, which is always in operation, though perhaps unknown. A noted philosopher once declared that if he were to see a lump of lead suspended in midair without visible support, he would know at once that a hitherto unknown law had become manifest, and not that a law had been violated. And so it is with miracles. A hitherto unknown law has become manifest. And then, and I love this where it says, God's law, and this is what you all were saying, God's law is ever operative, but this becomes apparent only as it is understood. This may be illustrated by the law of mathematics, which never ceases to act. Everywhere and under every condition, 12 times 12 make 144. Yet, this fact is not available unless it is perceived. So it is with spiritual laws. They remain unchanged throughout eternity. They work unceasingly, and ignorance of them is the only thing that ever makes them seem inoperative in human experience. Christ clearly understood the laws of God good, hence he could unfailingly demonstrate them. To him, there was no law of matter. He annulled the so-called material law when he turned the water into wine. He showed the impotence of the so-called law of gravity when he walked on the water. He reversed the law supposed to govern supply when he fed the 5,000. And in the case of others, and finally in his own experience, he destroyed the spurious law of sin, disease, and death. That was so beautiful and well said. And then think, you know, sometimes truly we've only scratched the surface. There are all these divine laws that we are under, but we have to perceive them, acknowledge them, and live them, and we will bring them to pass. They will be made manifest. But what do? We spend all our time focusing on not the enduring, the good and the true, but the temporal and not so good and that kind of thing. So we must release ourselves. Yes, be reflections.
And stop looking at matter or the material appearance of things to tell us how we're doing.
Yeah, or have your thought clouded with, you know, jealousy, anger, resentment, all those things. You cannot be the reflection.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the murky, muddy up the waters. You can't reflect. Or ruffled, if you're irritated, upset, pressured, running around. Not the stately goings of mind.
I was recently reminded of how Mrs. Eddy said in the very beginning, she was healing people so quickly, even people in the other room. All she would know is the truth about them and they'd be healed instantaneously. And somebody asked her, how do you do this? And at the time she said, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just know that it's the truth, but I don't know how it happens. And when she started, you know, really investigating, how is this happening? It was because there was nothing, like Florence just said, there was nothing to interfere, get in the way of God reaching that person. Mm-hmm. Even though it looked like it was from Mary Baker Eddy, there was nothing there to get in the way of that healing power to touch that individual. And I've been thinking about that so much recently. I don't know whether I read it in the, but it's just, she didn't even know how she was doing it, but she learned later that it's just getting out of the way, like was already mentioned. There's nothing there to interfere with it. I just love that example.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it was a medical doctor who witnessed one of her healings who encouraged her to write a book. Explain how this is done, please.
And do any better than that book. Sometimes people will ask me, well, how do you heal? Or what? It's hard to put into words when it's a divine inspiration that comes to you. And as Mrs. Eddy said, sometimes you don't know how. I mean, it is God that heals, not any person, but always God.
It's the scholastic mentality that doesn't know, because it does not have a scholastic explanation.
Thank you.
It's an inspired explanation.
Yes, thank you. And they'll never be satisfied with whatever you say. I mean, if the chapter on Christian Science Practice doesn't answer it, I don't know what would.
It wasn't written by someone in Harvard.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So therefore, yeah. How silly is that?
Mm. She does say a love for God and man is the true incentive in healing. So that is a clue.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
You do feel a sense of love and compassion come over you. But again, it's always some divine thing that comes to you. It's nothing you conjure up or work on. It is reflection. Thank you, Tony.
And she does also warn us that, you know, students who start with a letter but don't have the spirit of it will make shipwreck of their faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's the spirit that quickeneth, right?
Mm-hmm.
The flesh can do nothing.
Profiteth nothing.
Profiteth in
the letter.
Yeah. All right, Jeremy, you want to read the golden text?
Revelation. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, saith the Lord, which is and which was and which is to come, the Almighty.
Thank you. Again, what started out as saying, Chardell was saying, God being all, there's nothing but him. And I love it. In the responsive reading, it says many times, the Lord, I am the Lord and there is none else. That's it, folks.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Have a good day, everybody. I swear to say that. I'm the Lord and there is none else. And God's laws in three words.
I am all.
I am all. Mm-hmm. So what's your problem here? Whatever that problem is actually the presence and power of God. And if you can get into really knowing that, whatever the problem is will dissipate to its native nothingness. Okay, Shardy, what did you send me?
Oh, this is about on Wednesday evening, a testimony from someone very dear talked about righteousness. And it's from Isaiah. Drop down, ye heavens, from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them bring forth salvation, and let righteousness spring up together. I, the Lord, have created it. So I looked it up on our website, and I got a few things. First, from the dictionary, 1828. Purity of heart, this is righteousness, conformity of heart, and life to the divine law, holiness, justice, honesty, virtue, holy affections, true religion, perfection, exact rectitude, faithfulness, active and passive obedience of Christ. And then from Duncan Sinclair, Mrs. Eddy also writes, this is an excerpt. In the science of Christianity, mind, omnipotence, has all power, assigns sure rewards to righteousness, and shows that matter can neither heal nor make sick, create nor destroy. Righteousness, which is right thinking and right acting, must be based on a correct understanding of God, good, and a corresponding knowledge of the unreality of matter or evil. Then, being scientific, it cannot fail to receive its reward. And then Psalm 23, he leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And then finally, from Mr. Kratzer, from Dominion Within, we should seek first the kingdom of God, which is at hand and within you, and his righteousness, right thinking and feeling, knowledge of the truth and love, devoid of fear, and outward things will be added unto us.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a beautiful explanation by Kratzer. So, and that is what we say many, many times, seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And all these things shall be added unto you. So, and I love that definition of righteousness too. It's beautiful. It's one we should be familiar with. So thank you, Shardy.
Thank you.
It was interesting. Christina in Mexico sent me this little, I don't know what you'd call it. It was saying the difference in how people spend time. It was in Spanish, so she had to reinterpret how they spend time from 1930 to 2024, how much time was spent doing various things. It didn't go into, I don't know if this was a worldwide study or what it was, but anyway, it was interesting because, of course, it starts out with on the top of the list was family, and that was like with 22%, and then friends, school, neighbors, and then church. Church was up on the upper level, though, of how people spent time.
In 1930.
Yeah. Well, actually, this was 34, but 34. Yeah, around that time. So then it goes, and of course, no one spent any time online because there wasn't any online. And then it goes on, and you can see things switching and changing as the years go by to 2024, when a whopping 60.7% of their time is spent on online. Church goes way down. Even family isn't that up there. Co-workers, bars and restaurants, friends, and then more down, family, church. So think about it. And the name of that article that Chardell was quoting from by Duncan Sinclair was Righteousness Exalteth a Nation. That's what reminded me of this little thing that Christina sent me. Now, it was Misha Ayla who said a very beautiful testimony about, I mean, this is a good treatment for the weather, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That we can let the skies pour down righteousness. And then she noticed, too, let righteousness spring up. So it coming down, coming up, righteousness everywhere. Is she online?
She's here.
Do you want to say anything, Ayla?
I am. Hi. I don't know what to say. Yeah, it just sprang at me as the verse says, righteousness springs up. And I just found it so beautiful that nothing but righteousness can pour down from heaven. It pours, but it's not destructive. It's always good.
Thank you. That's very beautiful. And, you know, when you get these thoughts like that, they're beautiful thoughts. They're wonderful to share with others because they're helpful and they're God-given. And that's the purpose of your studying the lesson, to get to expand on it. And some of you do study it, looking up words and study further. And Carrie certainly does. She sent me this beautiful poem, and she said the poem reminded me of "Let the skies pour down the righteousness," because God pouring down righteousness like a gentle rain in the heat of the day. And it's called "Love Springtime" by Charles Sandelin. As from the distant skies to sight unknown descends through heat of day the cooling shower, giving refreshment to the grass and flower that seem in summer's drought a weary groan. The gentle rain from out of heaven blown of love's invisible and tender power in heated air's harmonious hour doth soothe the troubled thought till fear hath flown. And wakening from its dream, the morning light hath chased the dismal darkness round about. 'Twas but a fleeting phantom of the night, for love's sweet freshness is within without. Eternal springtime in each heart blooms bright and leaves no taint of weariness or doubt. Very beautiful. And I've been grateful because, and I've been praying about this, that we've had sunny days and then some rainy days or rainy nights. A combination of everything that's just right, not too much, not too little, which is how it should be. And I've noticed too how the birds are so happy. They're happy when it rains. You hear them chirping away. They're really happy after the rain. They just chirp and sing and praise God, as we talked about last week. So
I don't think they know how to be unhappy.
No. And this is staying in the kingdom of heaven, in God's kingdom, where only the beauty, the right weather conditions, the beauty of God, people getting along harmoniously, not fighting and carrying on over nothing, really. So stay in that kingdom. You can. It's ever present, just as we started out with the laws of God, ever present. You're never without it, the watching point. Just a matter of being aware of it, perceiving it, hearing it, listening for it. And only your spiritual senses can tell you of it. Nothing else can.
It does change it. Straight across to a smile, you know, when you're aware of it. But if you're not aware of it, you know, life just is blah, 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 blah.
Thank you. No, it's true. It really is so true. If you're in that Adam dream, I mean, everything's a mess. Good gosh. So, but when you're in the kingdom of heaven, everything is wonderful and you'll see it all around you. And then that's how it should be. And that's how Jesus was. And that's how he demonstrated. And there was no lack. That's a big one, right? Whatever he needed, food, the money in the fish's mouth, whatever was needed, he had. So remember that. Don't accept anything that's ungodlike. No, you're in the kingdom. You're entitled to all good. You're the daughter or the son of the king. Never forget that. Now, along with this beautiful poem, I guess Jeremy, he sent me from Longyear.
Right.
Yeah. Longyear sends out newsletters, and we get them, but Jeremy printed this one out for me, recent one, and it was called The Flower Lady. It was actually meant for children, but I thought it was just beautiful. I'm going to share some of it with you. Guess who the flower lady was or is?
Mrs. Eddy.
And she wrote this poem when she was just a young girl growing up on a farm in New Hampshire, just a part of it. Resolutions for the day. I think that Tom might have had this in one of our Bible studies. I'm pretty sure he did. It's a beautiful poem. And the first few sentences, to rise in the morning and drink in the view, the home where I dwell in the vale, the blossoms whose fragrance and charms ever new are scattered o'er hillside and dale. Now remember that, to rise in the morning and drink in the view. Do that first thing in the morning. Look at the beauty that's all around you. Drink it in. Don't turn on your phone or your TV or whatever else or your computer. Take that time. I've been reading even, you know, articles, other kinds of articles where they say, whoa, don't get into that stuff. Take the first hour or more. They don't say this, but I'm saying this for prayer and communion with God. Amid the restless eyes of earth, how steadfast is thine eye, fixed on the silent loveliness that fills the morning sky. From one of our hymns. The restless earth, the eyes of restless earth, you see them looking here, there, and everywhere and have that worried frown on their face. So drink in the beauty of the morning. And then it goes on, this beautiful article about Mrs. Eddy and how she was. She mentions flowers 60 times in Science and Health. And as a little girl who attended Sarah Clement, a little girl who attended the experimental kindergarten that Mary taught when she was in her 20s, lived next door to the Baker family in Sanborton, New Hampshire. She often spotted her teacher working in the garden in the evening. Mary was exceedingly fond of flowers, according to Sarah, who recalled that she always wore gloves with the fingertips cut off. Once the flowers had bloomed, Mary would cut, arrange, and press, date, and paste some of the beautiful blossoms into an album for remembrance. And it says how she loved calla lilies, the morning glories, and the moonflowers. She used to, when she lived in Lynn, she'd have them on her balcony, and she'd pin the flowers to her dress. And when she moved to Concord, New Hampshire, into Pleasant View, the children in the neighborhood began to call her the Flower Lady. And her home was just so full of flowers in there. Sometimes several hundred people would come by to look at her flowers. She had beds of tulips and roses and all kinds of lovely flowers. And said that Minnie Wygrand, you love to pick the flowers from the mass of colors and fragrances that filled several of the flower beds on the farm. And she remembers the pansies as being particularly beautiful in the spring, describing them as immensely velvety and with unusually long stems. And Mrs. Eddy would say, I love the symbol of the morning glory with its bright promise of the coming light. But her favorite of all, does anyone know her favorite flower?
The rose.
Mm-hmm.
A rose.
Pink rose, yes. A pink Killarney rose, to be exact, which I've looked up. I don't know if you can get it anymore. That sounds very Irish. But one of her students gave her a beautiful picture, painting of the rose that she displayed in the dining room. And they would say there'd be so many roses blooming every day. They'd go out, they'd pick bundles of it. They would put flowers in everyone's room. Can you imagine so many flowers? So, and then when she met Chestnut Hill, it wasn't quite as profuse, and because she didn't have the acreage, but there were still beautiful flowers. And it said the wallpaper in her home at at Chestnut Hill was featured roses, brilliant tulips, delicate daffodils, and more. And her book of poetry had a beautiful picture of pink roses on it. So it did say, though, in later years, and I'm sure this was after the law case and all those trials she endured in Chestnut Hill, she said she didn't want the flowers. She said, life is no path of roses or path of flowers, which is a little sad, but you don't want to get too carried away, I guess, either. She wanted to make sure we were had our feet on the ground and working. But along with all of that, and I think this goes well with God being the only cause and creator, the latest, I think, as far as I know, the latest virtue medicine was beauty. So now, in the newspaper, gratitude, courage, forgiveness, awe, honesty, laughter, joy, generosity, charity, love, optimism, hope, healing of resentment, and beauty. God's preparations of the sick are potions of his own qualities. So, and it goes on about beauty, that how it does, it cheers the heart. It makes you happy to see something beautiful, right? Go out and see a garden or anything beautiful. We have these Korean dogwoods in our yard. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but oh my goodness, they are so beautiful this spring. And just, there must be millions of perfect flowers on these trees. They're just incredible. And each flower is perfect, unfolds perfectly. And it does give me great joy to look at it and think about it. And it says in a hospital, if the person has a view of the beautiful scenery and trees and things like that outside, they get better quicker than if you're just looking at a wall.
Yeah.
And so, and of course, Bignell Young has said that nothing, everything beautiful is in the kingdom of heaven. It all has to be beautiful. And even the idea of health. I mean, when you're healthy, you're more apt to be beautiful, right, than when you're all feeling pretty horrible. So a big smile brightens your face and keeps your cheeks rosy. And it goes into this, too, where someone, a professor of architect or something, I don't know, he said that an inherent connection between moral goodness and beauty. The essence of beauty is virtue. When one's character tends towards selflessness, kindness, and tolerance, this is the purity of a person, and they will be beautiful. And I love this. This is a philosopher, Plotinus or something. Anyway, beauty is the mask that goodness wears. Isn't that a beautiful thought?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it goes on, beauty is something divine, and it's something that's given to human beings by a divine source. To perceive and embody true beauty in one's art and daily life, one must purify the soul. And they gave a test to picking. People had to pick what picture they like best with a variety of pictures. And the one that always came on top was a picture of something, someone doing some good deed. That was the picture or pictures that people liked the most. Because it makes you happy when someone does a good deed, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So remember that, and we all know that beauty is beauty.
Does.
Yes. A friend can never seem what?
Less than beautiful.
Beautiful.
Less.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So it's that inner glow that you have, and everyone can have it. And God made everything beautiful in his time. And that is God's creation, and it's quite wonderful. So I love that. And we all can benefit from these things. And we do. Okay. Now back to other things. Nancy.
Oh, yes. From Exodus. Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he shall show to you today. I found an article, which I'm going to read some excerpts from, called Fear Ye Not, Go Forward. It was from an October 11 journal by an Ernest C. Moses. The 14th chapter of Exodus is a deep wellspring of practical assistance, a spring of faith and courage, whose refreshing waters can never be exhausted, because they proceed from a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the consciousness of good only. Under the leadership of Moses, the children of Israel had been safely led out of Egypt on their way toward the promised land. They finally arrived at the shores of the Red Sea, where they encamped, because the great body of water offered them no means of transportation. Biblical narrative tells us how those who sighed for the old ways of bondage, when pursued by the chariots and horsemen of Era, became sore afraid and resentful and fearful. But their great leader was undismayed by these signs of weakness and infidelity. Immediately drew on the unlimited abundance of courage, always available to those who sincerely trust God, and commanded his people to cease their fears, to stand firmly, and experience the salvation which would come that very day from an unyielding reliance on God. It sometimes seems in the progress of the student of Christian Science that his pathway is obstructed by a veritable Red Sea of fear, and he is surrounded by a tangled wilderness of hostile human opinions and beset by a horde of mortal beliefs originating in ignorance and doubt, which pursue him and try to prevent his advancement toward the land, the consciousness of freedom. To students of Christian Science temporarily pressed into extremity of fear and indecision, the commands of God, delivered through his highest representative during the period of the Exodus from Egypt, are indeed of great importance. They epitomize in these words, stop fearing, rely on divine mind, cease complaining, go forward. Instead of looking back into Egyptian darkness, whining over the demands of progress, instead of thinking how much better it might have been not to have commenced the journey out of material sense toward the land of promise, the exclusive consciousness of spirit, it is ours to turn our faces bravely toward the eras which obstructed our path, trust God more firmly, and know that his outstretched arm can always save to the uttermost, than to go forward, never doubting a safe exodus from even the most threatening conditions. I really was so happy I found that.
It's beautiful, yeah. Yes. I love that. Stop fearing, rely on divine mind, cease complaining, and go forward.
Just go forward.
Yeah. I mean, you might have a moment or two of that, but then get over it, right? That's as Bruce says.
get over it.
Go forward.
Your belly aching.
Yeah, that's what my dad would say. Put your belly ache. And yes, and looking back and going into all that. So thank you. That was wonderful. And that story, it's such a, oh my gosh, such a wonderful story. In our lesson, a beautiful lesson this week about Moses. And that statement, and I know I've given it in testimonies and things, but fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you this day. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. I don't care what your problem is, how long you've seen it. You can say to yourself, I'm not going to see this ever again. It's over. It's done. It's finished. Someone was asking me about that recently. Because sometimes things seem to pop back up. But then Mrs. Eddy said, if that happens, you just treat it again. It will diminish until it finally disappears. But I would say each time you can say, you'll see it no more forever. And
just one thing I found in reading the lesson is that they had, the Egyptians had army stations all along their path, every so distance. It wasn't just like I'm leaving Egypt and then I got a big desert and I get to the water. But there was, they had outposts all over. They were armed, and they had to carry, go all the way through all that fear before they could even get to the river. So it's they had to keep reaffirming, you know, their faith, and finally, you know, there was no lack of courage needed at any point. They just had to keep going. And so it up to me that, you know, it was just like easy trek. You're out, the door's open, you get through there, and presto, you got a river to crawl across.
Thank you very much. That's interesting. Yes. And Carpenter, in one of his watching points, says, you never finish a treatment until what? Didn't even know that.
You know it can't be reversed.
Mm-hmm. So you know it never existed.
Thank you. Never happened.
Mm-hmm. Never happened in the first place. That wipes it out. How can you have it come back if it never happened? I mean, do you think a dream is going to come back? It might. If you're so worried about it, you might dream it again. But remember, it's only a dream, not the truth. You're never really experiencing it. You're a sleepwalker. So get rid of things with that statement. And honestly, it's done me well that the Egyptians you see today, you will see no more forever. I have declared that when things seem to keep popping back up. I say, not this again. I'm going to see you no more forever. Or the other thing that Kimball says, I guess it's in teaching addresses, that this place has changed hands. You can't come back here. God resides in me. The kingdom of heaven dwells within me. And you're not knocking on my door again. This place has changed hands. Get thee hence, Satan. Say it like you mean it, and mean it like you say it. Mm-hmm. And then I love, you know, then all this beautiful stories and backed up with Hebrews about faith. And by faith, Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. You know, that little children's asking, well, you can't see him, but you can feel him. But anyway, and that word endured, to remain, to abide, to support without yielding to force or pressure. And how did he endure? Because he knew God was with him. I am the Lord, and there is none else. As Craig just said, all through that time, he endured.
Those people doubting, questioning,
yes. He stayed with it. It's a beautiful story. It's so beautiful.
And Bruce recommended, I think it was at church on Wednesday, the article Making the Port by Reverend Kratzer, and that talks about enduring and not looking at matter to see how are we doing, but, you know, looking at our heart to know what progress we're making and not checking the signs that matter wants to talk about. That means nothing.
Yeah, I think that was Lauren. Yes.
Father. Oh, yes. Sorry. Well, whoever it was a great article.
Yes, and Tony went ahead and recorded it, and Bruce has recorded it. So we have it, mm-hmm. And it is a great article. It sure is. Yes, it is. Go forward.
Yeah.
Lawrence, did you want to say anything more about it?
Well, because, you know, that discouragement challenges everyone. And, you know, if you're not looking at the goal, sometimes you can get so down with it, you know, with the error reappearing or the error you bombarding you and walking all over you. It's like, yes. That's why I like that article.
Yes. Bruce, did you want to say anything about it?
Hello?
But, well, life may not always be easy, but this one thing I can say, that he has done all things well. And that is the one who has done all things in the first place, the Alpha and Omega. So we go forward.
Thank you.
Because there's no other way to go.
Yes. And also the beautiful statement, I am that I am. And if it's not from God, it ain't happening. And Big Dal Young did write a beautiful article on that. I am a lawmaker. My laws are divine laws, omnipotent laws. I am a law unto this and every condition and circumstance that confronts me. So love is not afraid. Love says, I am. Every action, incident, movement, faculty, function, organ in the divine creation is an idea of God and is constantly declaring, I am. Every idea must do this and cannot do otherwise. It does not know how and cannot know how to be unlike infinity, perfection, and eternality. We are created in that image and likeness of God, which is a ceaseless topic. Okay, Betty?
On the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. And I love that because sometimes when I need to send a correction to Jeremy on the website, Science and Health. So we run into a small ones usually. And I send that to him and I always think, I've sent that to Jeremy and now we won't see that Egyptian ever again. And it just makes me very happy.
Love so, making
in the small
history.
Good. That's a good. Thank you. So
I'm hoping we can all just stand in awe of our God, because this story in Exodus is probably the most dramatic and spectacular I think there is. When they left Egypt, they left no one behind, and they all made it. And they traveled for miles through a desert without a map. And then when they got to the sea, they got to this point where God was going to open it up for them and crossed over the sea. And they all made it.
They all made it.
Can we stand back in awe of our great God?
And that's why awe is one of the virtues, virtue medicine, because we need to be in awe and just be thrilled at what God has done. And a couple more articles I want to get to before we end. One was called Looking Up and Lifted Up. And it says that in Mrs. Fletcher's biography, I'm not sure who she is, but she tells of a convert who had a strange dream. He thought he was down a very steep well in the night, and looking up, he saw a single star shining far above him, and it seemed to let down lines of silver light that took hold upon him and lifted him up. Then he looked down, and he began to go down. He looked up, and he began to go up, and he looked down again and began to go down. And he found that by simply keeping his eye on that star, he rose out of the well and his foot stood on the firm ground. A parable is in the dream. If you look down, you go down. And if you look up, you go up. There must be first the looking up before there can be the lifting up. Mm-hmm. That's why I always say focus on God. Don't focus on your problem. You focus on your problem and it's going to just catch more eggs or whatever. It's going to get bigger anyway. So look at God. Focus on the enduring, the good, and the true. Look up. Stop looking down. And that's just kind of what we read before, too, about that.
All right. And isn't that what Jesus said? And if I be lifted up?
And lift all mankind.
Yes.
And the lifting up is the lifting up of our consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, physically rising or anything like that.
And then this one, our high calling, quoting another thing from the lesson. He who stands for and with the Christ idea may say with the psalmist of old, Tremble thou earth at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the God of Jacob. Thus to realize that our human sense of weakness and unworthiness is not the determining fact, but that God, eternal truth, is at work in us and through us to will and to do of his own good pleasure. This gives a sense of sufficiency, which counts. A gentle, loving sense it is, but it can face the world, the flesh, and the devil, if so be, without hesitation and without tremor. So, yes, we can tremble all we want in front of a lot of things, but in our own strength and our own power, we're not going to make it. But with God, go back to the watching point we talked about originally, reflecting him, all things are possible. And it's just wonderful. So why bother with the other stuff? It's not worth it. Look up, my friends. Okay, we're going to end now on another Carrie article. Thank you very much, Carrie.
Entitled, this is from a 1913 Sentinel, I guess. Entitled, Love's Allness by M.H.W. Carter. Writes, love, divine love, is the only creator. But I suffer, I am sick, cries a sense-blinded mortal. I am weighed down by poverty and misfortune, moans another. Fame and power are mine, exults a third. And ever above the wild, unreasoning din and clamor of human ignorance and willfulness, love, compassionate, merciful, just, and wise, speaks in solemn tones, quote, I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending, which is and which was and which is to come, the Almighty, end quote. In the fullness of time, when spiritual understanding is sufficiently matured, there comes to the earnest seeker the vision of truth, and he knows, no longer believes, that infinite love is the only creator, and that all that he made is very good. Then, too, he realizes something of the constant guidance, the tender sheltering, the sustaining love which environs him by night and day. And in deepest humility and gratitude, raises anew the psalmist's song of rejoicing, quote, Bless the Lord, O my soul, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, end quote.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.